medical community proudly presents the JDE Connection, a Quest On Air podcast production.
This podcast explores and showcases how JDE customers are harnessing specific functionality and capabilities to drive business success.
Hello, JDE Connection listeners. Welcome back. I'm Chandra Wabshaw, one of your podcast hosts, and I'm the business solutions lead at Kolos IS Support. With me this week, and most weeks, is my friend and podcast partner, Paul Houtkooper, Vice President of JD Edwards Product Development at Oracle. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Chandra. Thanks. I'm so happy to occasionally be here and occasionally be back. Oh, man, I can't help but roll my eyes. I mean, most of the time I'm here. What can I say?
I know, anyway. But I had to laugh. Sorry, everybody.
Yeah.
I saw Paul roll his eyes and, well, that's what happens.
Yeah, well, I don't know if anybody else has this problem, but I pull a retina and then my contacts pops out and then
I know.
Anyway,
right?
It's like a yard sale. It's each yard sale down here. Anyway. All right. So what's going on this week? It's Masters Week. Ha ha. So we gotta like hurry up with this recording because you know the Masters is on.
It is?
It is.
Hey, did you know? We have a team. We picked a team. I recruited you to help me pick a team.
Yeah, don't you know? And this will be the last time you do that because I think we're in last place.
Yeah. It's kind of like the football picks. Uh-huh. I think I should just bank the picks.
That's fair. It's all right. Although I know some of the ones that you picked, and I can tell you right now, they didn't make the cut.
That's also true.
Ah, darn it. Anyway, yes, it's Masters Week. It's a fun week. I got this nice setup down in the basement with the home theater, so not that Ooh. You know Oracle wants to know that I just plant myself in a recliner with my laptop while up typing out emails and I can keep up to date with what's going on. I'm just saying.
Well, on the bright side, you can do that over the weekend too then, so you know.
Wait, no, see. now I mean we're gonna have this cut. Yeah, we're
no foreshadowing.
Foreshadowing our conversation today. I see how it is. Okay. Anyway, everything going okay with you?
Yeah, it's going pretty good. Staying busy and still trying to keep up some of the running and starting. I know I need to commit to some races. I say that it's already April. So I just need to get on the ball and do it. So maybe I'll mark that as my priority item for the weekend.
Maybe if your race coordinator would get off his butt and...
and help me. Yeah.
And help you.
Exactly.
Yeah. We both wear many hats in this podcasting relationship. That's all I'm going to say. Anyway.
Exactly. Exactly.
Fun times. So what do you want to talk about this week?
Well, I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about an article that you and I talked about this week. I had shared an article with you that came out from the HR executive site. The title of it was 81,000 people shared their dreams for AI, and here's kind of what HR leaders owe them. But what I thought was interesting is the AI interviewer it said it sat down with. Not sure what that means yet, but it actually invited Claude users. So actual users of AI to talk openly kind of about their hopes and their fears, and they wanted to learn something about kind of the public sentiment towards AI. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that article today.
Ah, okay. So we're not going to talk about the article about the Green Bay Packers likely sweeping the Vikings this year that also, no. Instead, we want to talk about AI.
Something worthwhile.
Okay. All right. Total buzzkill. Okay, let me context switch and let me get ready for this. But no, yes, I thought it was an eye-opening article. I really did. And very timely as we're trying to roll out AI throughout the organization, right?
Well, not just your organization, everywhere.
Right. But, you know, as I'm reading this, and I'm obviously responsible for a fairly large organization and making sure that we attempt to leverage this technology to the best of our ability, I was just caught by some of the observations, to be honest, and it made me realize that forcing technology on people isn't necessarily the best way. Not that we're necessarily doing that. I mean, we're trying to do it in a way that is almost, rather than top down, is more ground up. It's like, hey, how about you tell me how you can
use
it?
You
go play with it. You go discover how it can benefit you. You show everybody else what that is. And we'll figure out if there's common use cases across the organization that we want to apply. So we're trying to take a ground up approach. But the article with what it touched on was, I don't know, I mean, it just gave me a completely different point of view or perspective to like view this rollout on. And I'm sure we're going to get into it into this conversation. You always use this word and it always gives me cause for pause, and that's empathy. Because that was the other thing that the article kind of made me think of is, look, we've got to be very thoughtful in what we do here. As fast as we want to go, you can't really jam this stuff down everybody's throat. So,
right. I feel like in certain levels of certain organizations, maybe not nonprofits, I feel like that empathy has gone a little bit by the wayside from leadership. And that's been tough. It's more like, you're just going to do it. Get over it.
Yeah.
Here you go. Mm-hmm. Right? With no care for how it might impact people or how it might impact processes as well.
Agreed. I mean, I think there's a genuine fear out there that actually doesn't get realized, especially in this technology space. Because let's be honest, I mean, we're in the space to innovate and create and imagine new ideas and discover and deliver. And we want to problem solve and we want to create new things that are going to add value. And this technology is one of those things. We love technology. We just want to embrace technology because that's the business that we're in. So this almost goes overlooked. Like the actual fear that people could have about this technology actually just gets overlooked because it just gets assumed almost that, why wouldn't you want to be more productive? Don't you want to be better at your job? Don't you want to feel more productive? Right?
Well, yeah, that's what we always hear. AI is going to make us more productive. Mm-hmm. But are we actually going to feel like we're more productive, or is AI just going to kind of raise that bar on what's expected of us?
Right. Be careful now, because we don't want to speak evil of AI, because, well, it is recording the episode. So just
fair point.
Let's not come browbeat AI, because this isn't necessarily against AI.
Right. No.
It's how you actually roll it out, how you get people engaged, mm-hmm. and how you use it effectively within your organization. Right. And you touched on it. That's the fear. Hey, is it going to make us more productive, or are we just going to feel that way? What about the company? Why does the company want this versus why does the individual want this?
From the individual perspective, I think we're all maybe feeling, not all, but I think a lot of people are feeling a little bit burnt out. As I listen and read various articles, listen to different podcasts, the term burnout, it comes up quite a bit. I think we're worried, like, is this going to make us more productive, or is it going to end up, like we said, raising the bar on what's expected of us? So now we have to do even more, and we're already tired. The whole, like, COVID, you know, starting with COVID, where we went into the work from home, has kind of translated to work from anywhere / work from everywhere.
Everywhere.
Right? You don't have a 9-to-5 job anymore. You've got Teams, you've got Slack, you've got those types of pings happening to you at all hours, especially if you're working with people in multiple time zones, right? They'll schedule meetings in the evenings or early in the morning. What used to be maybe your family time is now getting trampled on, right? Mm-hmm. Technology specifically in COVID, I don't think it helped us, you know, oh, now we can be remote. This will be great. Guess what? I think it just stacked more work on top of us.
Right. I mean, it allowed work to invade almost every aspect of your life, right?
Right.
And how many families out there now have a no phone rule at the table? And a lot of people say, well, that's because of social media. And, you know, maybe that's the case for your kids, but that's not the case for mom and dad. Mom and dad are checking their email.
You know, or their teams.
Or their teams. And, you know, you wake up in the morning and you check to see if you got anything overnight and you haven't even gotten out of bed yet. If we rewind the clock, when you first got, let's say, email on your phone, hey, I embraced it. I remember doing that. I was like, oh my gosh, I can knock this stuff out now. And I don't have to waste that time when I get into work. A, I can be more responsive. Like, you won't have to wait as long for me to actually respond. So when I'm working escalations, and that was kind of where I was at the time, is as an owner of a couple products, and I was really focused on the customer support side of things. For me, it was going to be a game changer because now I can get this stuff turned around quicker. I can delegate and I can shuffle and I can reassign and write and I can respond so fast because I can just be on my phone and get this stuff going. So I'm going to be just so much more efficient, which means it's going to turn into better turnaround times for my customer, which means I'm going to be better at my job.
Yeah.
In addition, I get a little time back, don't I? At the end of the day, now it's not going to take me as long to get through those things. So maybe I get a little time back to myself, not recognizing that, wait a second, the hour that you might have gotten back at work, you just gave up at home on your phone. It's this exchange that really, it didn't displace that time such that I get any time back. Instead, it, to your point, it just widened.
Widened it. Yeah, made more.
My workday. It made my workday longer. So fast forward to now, and you look at AI, you could easily look at AI the same way, that it's like, oh my gosh, it's going to make it so much quicker for me to get through these emails. But is it really doing that? Right.
Right.
But to your point, you've got Teams, you've got Slack, you've got email Teams / Zooms meetings. You've got all this stuff going on. And then, of course, you actually have the job, the actual work that you have to get
right.
done.
And when you're stacked with meetings all day, your time to work comes, well, maybe after mm-hmm. hours, because you've
right.
got so many meetings on your calendar because you're meeting with people all over.
Right.
And yeah.
and how many of us are multitasking? I mean,
oh,
all the time.
All the time. And mm-hmm. quite frankly, I would argue, I don't think we're wired at this point for this level of multitasking, right? You look at evolution and you look at hunters and gatherers. What did they do? Well, one thing. Hunt.
One thing. They gather. Focused on one thing. You know,
right?
at a time.
At a
at
time.
At a time. Right?
Yeah, exactly. They weren't trying to gather berries as they were trying to shoot the antelope, right? Yeah, exactly.
It's a pluck,
boop, boop, boop,
pluck.
Boop, yeah. right? And yeah, we've had technology in place and maybe there is some level of quote unquote multitasking, although I've seen studies that say it doesn't happen. But whether or not those studies are recent, more recent now compared to the studies that I'm referring to that were a little bit older, where guess what? We probably hadn't adapted. Maybe we've adapted a little bit, but maybe not. And the pace of change is so fast. And on top of that, you're throwing all of this in a blender. And I'm like, you know what? Some days I only operate like a single-threaded job queue, one thing at a time. That's all I could do.
And is your hope, I don't want to say your hope, but, you know, is AI supposed to suddenly, well, John Holder would say this, right? Is AI going to be your virtual batch queue, right? Is that
nice.
Going to allow you to be
well
this,
played.
You know, multitasker galore, right? Because you can take it and fire and take and fire and take and fire. Now you get all these agents that you can deploy on your own to go do all these tasks for you. So now all of a sudden you can multitask. Why? Because you're not the one actually doing the multitasking, but the AI is.
Right.
So,
exactly.
I mean, who knows? Who knows if that's where we get to? Because we know AI can help with authoring. It can help with summarizing, you know, extracting information out of documents. Hey, guess what? I don't have time to read these 50 pages or whatnot. I don't have time to get through my whole inbox to tell me if I have any action items. Just extract them out of there for me so I get the most important things. Automate some redundant or repetitive tasks that I currently have. Like every time I get this, I go through these five steps. I get a customer request. Well, who's the customer? Who am I going to be meeting with? Da-da-da, you know, let's do some research. How do I do that intel? How do I capture that? I can have AI help me out with that. And that maybe does allow me to do some level of multitasking now that I couldn't do before. But now you got to keep track of all of that, right?
Well, yeah. And it's not perfect. So does it really give you that much time back? Because now maybe you're spending the time reading a summary, but then you're like, I feel like that summary's not quite right. Or you read that email that you had it generate for you. And you're like, I totally don't talk like that. That is mm-hmm. not me. So now you're going back through it. And sometimes that takes longer, right?
Right. I mean, how many times, if your prompt is it right now, you're spending all this time prompt engineering and refining your prompt and you're trying to pick up on any hallucinations. And if you are having it help you craft an email, you give it maybe 3-4 points that it has to make, but then you're going to have to go back through and read that and make sure that it didn't add 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 other points that you weren't going to make, number one. And number two, is it in your tone? Does it use your tone? Is it your voice? Or do you just never talk that way? Is it, oh man, I remember when some folks in my organization first tried to use it for emails and business justifications, and I started getting these elaborate business justifications that read like a novel. You're just like, oh my God, this dramatic, all of these words. Right. And they were using all of these adjectives and stuff that they never use in their communication before. Right. And it just inserts all of these embellishments. And you're just like, oh my, you know, by the time you're done, I mean, my heart's racing because I'm like, this is the most amazing person. They're going to solve world hunger and get the Nobel Peace Prize next week. Yes, they deserve to be promoted, right? You know, but it reads so amazing that you have no choice, right? And then you go, wait a second, that's not them. They didn't know. And I've gotten, I don't know how many emails I've gotten where I'm like, okay, that is just pure hallucination and generation. And yes, it sounds good. Like every sentence sounds like a great sound bite. It's perfect. But when put together in a paragraph,
it does not flow.
No, it's like you stacked five billboards on top of one another and said, I wrote something. You know, and you're like, No,
you didn't.
So to your point, are you really multitasking and saving time and getting time back, or are you just spending more time? Is it taking more time to correct all that stuff? Or if you are getting time back, are you then filling that time with even more work?
Exactly. I guess if it is supposed to make us more productive or companies more productive, what happens next?
Yeah, I find it very interesting. And I throw it out there because I'm like, if you have this capability as a builder, like I consider myself kind of a builder, right? I love ideating, coming up with ideas for new product and coming up with solutions, and I want to build more. So when you get a technology like this, what you want to do is you want to leverage it to put more solutions out the door, right? To deliver more value to your customers. That's awesome. Let's go do that. But instead, what you see is tech companies basically choosing the other side of this, which is they're going after the cost cutting. They're going after the workforce reduction. Right. They may not say it, right?
No.
It's not necessarily
no.
out there where they said, hey, we eliminated this many jobs for blah, 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 blah reason, right? No, they're not going to say that. But we all know what the heck's going on. But rather than leveraging the technology as a way to actually put out better, more innovative product, and maybe product that they never even thought that they could do before,
right.
And it baffles me. It just baffles me because who's using it right now to actually accelerate their time to value? It's not the mature companies that have been out there for all that time. Maybe they got R&D arms doing that, maybe. But who's using it is all the startups. There are so many startups out there right now that are now leveraging this, and they define new ways to actually, like in my field, the whole life cycle of product development is completely been rethought. And these guys, they're deploying agents and they're working through the night and they never get tired and they're generating new solutions and new code and new, you know, day and night while we do what? You see what I'm saying? So they're the ones that are innovating at a very, very high clip, and they're accelerating up that maturity ladder. And the book that comes to mind is The Innovator's Dilemma.
Oh, yeah, right? Absolutely. You know.
So you've read that one as well?
Yeah, I read it several years ago. I probably should reread that, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I feel like it's still very relevant.
Absolutely. I mean, probably more relevant than ever in the current times, right? Or maybe there needs to be a revised version for current times. Anyway, that's just what I see. You can use it for like the optimistic and positive side of this is, hey, let's innovate more, put out more product. The more realistic, skeptical side of me says, no, they're just going to use it to be more efficient and cost cut, unfortunately.
Right. I think that ties back a little bit to my corporation's lack of empathy for their people.
100%.
It's not about the people.
And
it's about the money.
Yep. But if you go to that article, one of the things that it calls out, right, that really stood out to me is, again, why do these folks actually want to use technology? Initially, it was about being, I don't know, more productive or better at their job. But the reality was, is they wanted time back. It's not that it's not about being better at your job. I want to be better at my job. I want to get it done quicker.
Yeah. I'm always looking for ways to improve myself.
Right. So
and my job.
Right. So they want to get done faster. You want to get done faster, but not so you can do more.
No,
but so you can get that, you mentioned it with COVID and everything invading everything. They want to get the work-life balance back. They want to reclaim some of that time. And that's what we have to, back to your point about empathy, that's what we have to appreciate, is why do your employees and why do your coworkers really want to use this?
Right.
They want work-life balance.
Yeah. If you'd peel back the onions of the layers, it's kind of like if you've ever gone through therapy and they talk about emotions, you know, you've got your primary and secondary emotions. And sometimes the secondary one is the one that is more active. But when you peel back the layer on it, the real reason is for something else. It's a different emotion, really, is what is eating at you, if you will, for lack of a better term. And with this, it's kind of similar. When they were asked, their first response was, well, I want to be more productive. But when they asked them more questions, it wasn't about the productivity. It was about having more time, having more autonomy, having more meaningful work.
Exactly. So. And then on top of it, while that some were excited, there was a genuine fear. And
fear.
Obviously, some of us would jump straight to the conclusion, oh, well, the fear is that you're going to get displaced. No, no. The fear was actually about the dependency.
Yeah.
And the cognitive atrophy that might occur if we depend on AI too much, right? Then we'll stop thinking. Right. And I remember having this conversation with AJ Schifano. We were in an airport actually on our way back from an event, and he brought this up too. He was just like, what happens if we do turn to it? Do we stop our own thinking? Do we stop critically thinking? Does this cap the ideas? Because AI only knows what it's obviously learned. And if you don't feed it new ideas, it can't learn new things. So if you cap what it knows, and we turn to it for all of our ideas, and we don't think of any on our own, and we turn that all over to AI, do we eventually cap our innovation at some point? I was like, all right, okay, I need some time to, you know, digest
that one.
Thank you, AJ. 7:30 in the morning in the airport. Okay, I'm going to switch from coffee to maybe something else. Thanks, AJ. I appreciate that. Anyway.
Well, and that's absolutely fair. I know I've found myself, I feel like in more recent times, spelling. Like if I actually have to handwrite something out, like how much do you really like either the blue lines in Outlook or the red squiggles?
Yes. Yes.
I'm looking for those when I handwrite stuff. Like, did I spell that word right?
So true. I always write small anyway. So then when I literally forget how to spell something, I just write so small you can't tell. I'm like, but I know what that was. I don't need the actual letters. I know what I was writing.
Right. You know, one of the other items, and we've highlighted this as well, is investing in yourself, right? I think one of the observations in this article too was, obviously, we're afraid of some sort of cognitive atrophy, but being able to take this opportunity to invest in yourself, to learn more, to study a little bit, figure out how you can use this maybe to actually make yourself more productive, not necessarily meaning you want to take on more work, but let's work with our leaders in our organization and figure out how we can use this a little bit, like I think you said in one of our conversations, a little bit of a ground up where we want you to tell us how you can use this. Invest in yourself, whether that's through podcasts, whether that's through LinkedIn Learning or Pluralsight or wherever you, maybe it's your community college or maybe it's community education courses that you're looking at to kind of learn about this technology. We know it's not going away.
And the technology itself can help you. That was the other.
That's also true.
If you remember Leon Hogarth, he presented at a couple of our conferences. And one of the things he pointed out was he thought this was going to give him time back. And instead, now he's working. And I don't mean to scare people, but now he's working 110 hours a week. But why? Because he's learning. In the last 6 months, he learned 4 new programming languages that he didn't know before with the help of AI. It can accelerate your own learning. And yes. So what are 2 or 3 really rewarding things for people that really get the dopamine high? One is solving problems. AI might be able to help you with that, right? The other one is getting that time back. More rewarding time with your family, more rewarding time with outside nature, doing your hobbies and stuff like that. And the other one ends up being just learning yes. something new. If you can use AI to learn something new and apply whatever that new learning is to what you do on your job, you're going to be better at your job. And so use it to your benefit, not just as a shortcut. Don't just look at it as a shortcut. That for sure will lead to atrophy, and that for sure won't bring the results that you want. It won't be as rewarding.
Absolutely. Okay. So while AI potentially might be able to give us the time back, my argument might still be like, well, history kind of says we'll probably just raise our expectations. As much as I would love to feel like, oh, maybe I'll get a little bit of time back in my day, the reality is if you look back in time and you think about, even think about when PCs first came about or when ERP systems kind of first came out, companies came in and said, hey, we're going to use this. And people were fearful. Same thing as they are here, right? People are fearful. My job will be eliminated. And the companies touted how much productivity gains they would get. Well, I don't know. Maybe there's some lessons we can look back. I mean, those times for me, I was pretty young, right? At that time, I didn't care. I was all about jumping on those bandwagons because, man alive, woohoo, I saw things. I'm like, oh, yeah, I totally want to do this. And maybe... other generations, younger generations than me are where I was back then, right?
Right.
With that. But I'm hopeful, I'd like to be hopeful that maybe we can look back at those times and say, well, what did we learn? And what can we maybe do better this time?
I agree. I like that comparison. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, a lot of people are comparing this AI boom to the internet boom, and maybe from a bubble. That totally makes sense from the infrastructure investment.
Sure, the financial.
You know, that's fine. But when it comes to rolling out technology for productivity, your point about ERP systems and computers and email and those things coming out and how we implemented those, what lessons do we have? We should get better at how to roll out technology, to be fair.
Exactly.
But we'll see. I mean, again, the real question is, are we going to use AI to actually work better, or are we... going to just do more work? I don't know. We'll see. Time will tell. Let's put it that way.
Right. Maybe in another 100 episodes, we can revisit this.
That's right.
Let's see. Right.
All right. Well, time's almost out on us today, but we can't end without a Midwesternism. So what did your dad send you this week? I'm just kidding. I guess he got an article. So what the heck is this?
So I am a Facebook person. Yeah, I'm in that generation. And as I was going through my feed the other day, I do follow the newspaper from back in Minnesota, the Minneapolis Star Tribune. And there was an article that showed up and it was like, love it or leave it, how funeral bread came to be. And I was like, what is this? Well, because I don't have a subscription to the Star Tribune, my dad had to send me the article through email. So funeral bread. I got this. I opened it up. Well, first of all, there was a picture of said funeral bread in the Facebook feed. And I was like, what on earth is that?
Yeah, you showed this to me and I about vomited in my mouth. But anyway, go ahead. I had a similar reaction. What the what?
Exactly. So funeral bread is cinnamon bread topped with Cheese Whiz and green olives.
No.
Yeah.
No, see, I still say no. I don't, even now that we know what it is, I say no. I still, cinnamon bread's awesome. I love cinnamon bread. Cheese was, what the hell? I'm from Wisconsin. I love cheese. Green olives, love them.
Oh, love them.
Those, all three of those are like diametrically opposed to one another. None of them taste good together.
Cheese was on bread. Probably not going to eat cheese was with green olives.
No.
I'm not putting green olives on my cinnamon bread. How can this concoction taste good? Exactly. I don't understand.
How did this come to be, though? I mean, sorry.
Well, okay. So first of all, this is popular in a fairly small area, I think. Minnesota, Roseau specifically, and North Dakota. So that area is pretty close, right? So evidently, it's been around since the 70s in Roseau, and it was essential at like elementary school potlucks and church functions. And I was like, who came up with this?
What is in the water in Roseau? That's all I gotta ask.
I'm wondering as well, what? Why would you combine these things? And who thought it was funny? Maybe it was supposed to be a joke, and I don't know. But apparently, it's a legitimate thing. It still goes on.
All right. Well, here's the deal. So in one of these future episodes, we're going to have to do a taste test. So we're going to go out and get some cinnamon bread. Of course, we'll make it gluten-free. And we'll get our cheese whiz. Of course, that's got to be dairy-free.
But, are you sure there's really dairy right, in there in the first place?
Well, that's fair. That's fair. It is cheese whiz. I mean, fair. And then, of course, green olives. So we'll have to do a taste test and we'll do it live. Maybe we should do that at Blueprint. We'll do a live taste test. Oh, gosh. All right.
Easy to travel with all those ingredients.
Yep.
All right. For questions, feedback, or ideas for future episodes, contact us at the JDEConnection@QuestOracleCommunity.org. Until next time, let's keep learning, sharing, and most importantly, laughing together. Toodles.
See ya.
Thank you for tuning in for today's episode of the JDE Connection, a Quest On Air podcast production. Show notes and links can be found at questoraclecommunity.org/JDEConnection.
To learn more about what's happening in the Quest JD Edwards community, visit our website at questoraclecommunity.org/JDEdwards.